Good evening, good morning, good afternoon from wherever you are. Welcome to Let's Humanize the Workplace. I know that I haven't been on for a very long time, but let's say that with all this news related to DEI or related to inclusion, related to inclusive leadership, I also had to put on the oxygen mask on myself and make sure that I am energized, right? So I've been following Maria for quite a while now. I've seen her with her book, The Empathy Edge, and now The Empathy Dilemma. And I'll do a proper buy, but I'm really, really, really excited about this topic because those who are following me and those who don't know me, I use virtual reality to unlock empathy or to amplify empathy within other people. And let's start with the definition, right? So what is empathy? So empathy is seeing things from my perspective, from the other person perspective. And on the other hand, active listening, understanding how I feel, because oftentimes when people say how they feel, but I don't feel like this. And I should, you should feel like I do, right? It's not always the case because you don't have my lived experience or understand maybe my challenges, but I do want you to understand and listen to me so that you can walk a mile in my shoes. Because when you literally translate empathy, it's like walking a mile in the other person's shoes and empathize with them. So understanding where they are coming from. Before I introduce you, anything that you want to add, Maria, for the definition of empathy?
I mean, yeah, I have a whole definition of empathy based on my research,
I
so I don't know if
imagine.
you want to dive into that yet or
Okay,
you know.
let me do a proper introduction. Let me do a proper introduction. I'm going to read it out loud. But Maria Ross, who is she? She is a leadership and workplace culture consultant who helps businesses, teams, and creatives harness empathy for real-world success. Through her book, Empathy Edge Framework, or through her Empathy Edge Framework, she teaches leaders how to build trust, how to drive innovation, strengthen collaboration, and set boundaries whilst leading with compassion. So that got me thinking because too often people see empathy as a soft skill, and a soft skill is like woo-woo soft. No, it's not important for me, but I'm curious about what you want to add, what you can add to what I've shared, and let's build upon that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me today, Vivian. I too have followed your work for a while and it's been a mutual admiration society. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I help forward-thinking leaders and teams and brands leverage empathy to better connect and engage with the people who matter. And that translates to bottom line results. So it's not just
Say it,
because say
say
it's exactly, it's the RO, I'm all about the ROI of empathy. And that was actually what led to the first book on empathy, The Empathy Edge, was really trying to make a business case for empathy because the data and the research are out there that
Exactly.
empathy, empathetic leadership, empathetic cultures experience more innovation, more
Yep.
engagement,
Yep.
higher customer loyalty, more customer revenue, like all of these things that are hard, that are bottom line skills. And so I know we have this category of soft skills, and there's a whole history behind how soft skills became named soft skills and hard skills became named hard skills, but we don't have to go into that. But they really are skills of being able to motivate and empower individuals to work together towards a common mission and a common goal. And so, what's maddening to me is when people say, well, empathy has no place in the workplace. And I just want to say, anywhere where humans are interacting with other humans in order to
Exactly.
achieve an objective, you need empathy in order to make that objective real and enable it to succeed and enable the growth and the impact that you want to have. And so it's really a skill, it's akin to communication or integrity or just even, from a business acumen. If you're an accountant, being able to be good at finance. If you're a marketer, being able to be good at advertising and promotion. Empathy is something that goes across every function. Because you are influencing and impacting a group of people, even if you don't have direct reports. So, how do you show up in an interaction? How do you engage? How do you connect? How do you increase buy-in and get people to follow you, right? Get people to to want to be part of the mission. I once heard a really great definition of leadership, which is, and I'm going to butcher it, but it was something around a leader doesn't make you do something.
Oh, yes, inspires
you to want to do
exactly. And also, whilst you were talking, I was also thinking about, for those of you who are thinking or doubting that empathy is a valuable skill set, see empathy as an accelerator to accelerate trust, to boost innovation, to boost creativity. And given the fact that you're dealing with different generations that are going through different life phases, to empathize and understand where they are coming from, that's what makes you an empathetic leader as well. And it actually a recipe enhancer for inclusive leadership, for inclusive teams as well. Yeah. I have to connect it with food, right?
Of course. And, you know, I always talk about the definition of empathy that helps people embrace it at work is the ability to see, understand, and where appropriate, feel another person's perspective and use that information to act with compassion. So to take a next right step together. And I like to tell kind of analytical left brain types that if you're not touchy-feely, think of empathy as a method of information gathering. I am able to see your perspective and understand your context so that I can decide what the next right move is. And the next right move doesn't have to mean I submit to what you want. The next right move doesn't have to be you walk all over me. The next right move doesn't even have to be I agree with you. It's just, okay, now that I know your context and you're going to be willing to listen to mine, let's move forward together in some way, whether it's a strategic decision, whether it's a relationship, whether it's just, you know, the next right action could just be holding space for someone and listening, letting them vent. That you don't have to necessarily do something when you are trying to be empathetic. You can just listen. That is an action in and of itself.
And too often, you see what I did? I'm trying, I wanted to say something, but I wanted to make sure that I'm listening, that I'm active listening as well. Because too often, when you are in a meeting, maybe you are in a meeting and you want to say something, or maybe some people are a little bit slow with saying something, and there you have this coworker interrupting you or interpreting your ideas whilst it's not the thing that you want to say, right? So giving everybody the patience and the space to say what they want to say. And if they are not being included in the meeting, because sometimes people don't want to, find out ways or how you can include their voices as well. That's also empathy. I've gone totally off script. Let's go a little bit on script as well, because otherwise I might forget the total script. So a question that I always ask my guest speakers is, why do we need to humanize the workplace?
Well, we spend the bulk of our time there. And, you know, the fact that we have so many mental health crises happening because of work, there was a statistic, again, I'm going to butcher it, but where how you're treated by your manager impacts your mental health more than your relationship with your spouse or your partner. That's pretty telling, right? And if we want to be productive humans in the world, in our communities, we cannot write off our experiences in the workplace for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. That impacts not only our physical health, you know, never mind the high blood pressure and fatigue and early heart disease and all the things that have been found through science, but emotionally and mentally, are we at full capacity, or is what's happening to us at work beating us down so much that when we go back to our families, go back to our communities, go back to our world, we can't contribute, right? That it just doesn't make sense for creating a thriving world and a thriving community, that this place where we spend the bulk of our time will not allow us to be who we are, will not allow us to align with our values, will not treat us with respect. And the wonderful thing about younger millennials and Gen Z is they're the ones that have accelerated this conversation. I mean, so did the pandemic, but they're the ones going, wait a minute, I am going to spend the bulk of my time here. You want my loyalty. You want me to work hard. I want to feel seen, heard, and valued. And exactly. They're not wrong for doing that. You know, just
no, they're entitled. No, I'm kidding. Please don't butcher me because I'm just putting it.
I know.
But this is what people are saying,
they're
right?
They're entitled, and it's not entitlement to say, if you want me to do something for you, you need to treat me with respect, right? That's just what we were all too scared to ask for generations. Mm-hmm. So that belief and that transformation of culture is actually benefiting everyone, no matter what generation you're in, because you've got boomers, you've got Gen X who are burned out, fatigued, stressed, overwhelmed, unhappy. There was one study, the 2024 State of Workplace Empathy Report, which is given out by Business Solver. Yeah, if you go to businesssolver.com/edge, you can find that report for free. One of the findings was that, you know, and you think, oh, mental health issues only impact the workers, right?
No. 55%.
Yeah, 55% of CEOs said that they had had mental health challenges in the last year.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's everybody. It's not just the folks that are wanting to change the conversation. Humanizing the workplace benefits everyone and enables us to be more innovative, more productive, more creative problem solvers. All of the things we want our business to do to perform.
While you were talking, right, because one of the things that you mentioned was the impact of not having a humanized workplace, and that is burnout, mental well-being as well. I'm currently reading a book by Mark Wallin, who talks about how trauma, it doesn't always impact you only. It also dribbles down to different generations as well. So the book is called It Didn't Stop With You, How Trauma That You Are Enduring Now Might Impact Five Generations Later, right? So if you are enduring workplace trauma, know that it can impact your unborn child. Know that it can impact their children as well and their children as well. And this is all scientifically, there's a research regarding that. I'm currently still reading the book, but it's very interesting to see that people dismiss trauma, dismiss incivility, not realizing that these are all seeds that can play a role and trauma can be present. If you're not providing something, some kind of support, or maybe some companies even provide a budget for approaching mental health providers, right? That can also be very valuable. But I wanna go to your book, your last book. And we recently had a conversation about how I think we are currently going through worldwide, not only the US, worldwide are going through an empathy dilemma, right? Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to write the empathy dilemma, especially from the context of post-pandemic workplace challenges?
Thank you for that question. So when I wrote The Empathy Edge, it was actually my third book, and I researched it. And when I first put it out there, people didn't quite get it. People didn't understand if it was a self-help book or a business book. And I said, no, it's a business book. It's the business case for empathy. And from that book, I ended up pivoting my work from pure brand strategy to doing leadership development and leadership training, keynotes around this topic of how do you strengthen your empathy and how does it benefit the organization? How does it benefit the culture? How does it benefit the brand? And that was really, I always say that first book was for the skeptics because they needed the business case, right? The moral argument for empathy wasn't enough. So I said, fine, I'm going to meet you where you are and give you the business case. And then I had people in all those trainings and all those keynotes, leaders from C-suite on down, who said, you know, some of them were like, we're converted. We believe in this. We want to be human-centered leaders. And especially during the pandemic, here's where it gets challenging. Exactly. Here's where I feel like I can't balance empathy with high performance standards, or I can't balance empathy with holding people accountable. Yeah. Or worse, to what we were just talking about, I can't be empathetic and maintain my own boundaries. How do I do that? And that's really what I'm referring to as the dilemma of how do you keep these things in balance in a healthy way and be the healthy, what I call the legacy leader that you want to be. And so that's when I began to research, and I had been doing my podcast for 4 years with a new guest every week, had lots of information and insights and data. And so that's what the second book is about, is giving people a framework for five pillars to effective and empathetic leadership. And if you are struggling with the balance, you can look to these pillars to say, which one of these might be weak for me or my team right now? So that's, it's not necessarily linear. They're just supposed to be, take a look at this framework of these pillars. If you're struggling, if you're burning out still, if your team's performance is slipping, and don't abandon empathetic leadership. Don't revert back to command and control, because you're still not going to get good results that way.
That's a whole nother topic.
That's a whole other topic, right? But any of these pillars might be weak for you or your team. Yeah. So take a look and see what needs to be shored up.
Yeah, I see it as a way of strengthening your empathy muscle, right? And you divide it into five categories, these muscles, where you give people the opportunities to strengthen one of these categories, or maybe, you know, one at a time. That's ideal, right? One at a time. So in your book, you talk about joy in empathetic leadership. Mm-hmm. Can you share more about this role and how it impacts team dynamics?
Yeah, absolutely. And so really just that's the fifth pillar is joy. Mm-hmm. And they're just to kind of go back a little bit, they're not quite meant to be pillars to help you strengthen your empathy. They're pillars to help you maintain your empathy while you also have to deliver results and do the job you need to do, right? So the reason joy is a part of the equation is because, you know, I researched hundreds of successful, empathetic, and effective leaders to try to deconstruct what made them so special. Like, how were they able to do this in a way where they were delivering outstanding results and seemingly looking like they weren't exerting any effort? You know, they didn't seem stressed. They didn't seem burned out. And that last pillar of joy was actually one I added later. I initially had four pillars, but I was like, something's still missing in the recipe, right? It was like, to your point about food, like it doesn't have enough salt. It doesn't have enough time. Like, I don't know what it is. And I went back and I looked and I reviewed and I researched. I'm like, it's joy. And not that you're the funniest boss. It's not that you're a comedian. It's that you create, even in the toughest work situations, even in at police stations or emergency rooms or high stress workplaces, how can you create a sense of levity and camaraderie so that you build trust and that people actually want to be empathetic to each other? They want to support each other. And that joy element means sort of like not taking yourself so seriously, leaving space for the nonsense, right? Leaving space for the, how was your weekend? What's going on? Tell us about your vacation. Tell us about your latest hobby. What are you struggling with right now? You know, let's talk about it. Let's do some team bonding, but it doesn't have to be, you know, forced organized bonding. It could just be, you know, are you creating an environment where people feel comfortable? Maybe the first 5 minutes of a meeting, first 10 minutes of a meeting, just talking about their weekend. Maybe there's
breaking the ice or warming up the walls or breaking down the walls, right? So that people can connect and engage in conversation. So I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
And who doesn't want to be, I mean, that's a workplace you want to show up for if it brings you some joy, even when you're doing the work you don't want to do, right? Like, nobody wants to do budget spreadsheets. Well, some people do. It does bring some people joy.
From a former person that loved, and I still love Excel, right? So
right. But for some people, it doesn't. But you know, there's always. It doesn't mean that your job's going to be joyful in every moment. That's an unrealistic expectation. But can you find the joy and the levity in the work you need to do, and can you be there for each other, in almost a like, hey, that was really hard, but we got through it together kind of a way.
Exactly. And also celebrate those moments, right? Because oftentimes we sprint and we run the marathon, don't look back, don't reflect. And then you go on to the next and on to the next, on to the next.
Oh my gosh, so I'm so guilty of that. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Celebrate. Have a carrot cake on me.
I love it.
Okay, you did address it previously, but I still want to highlight it as well. And that is, there is this misconception about empathy being a pushover, or somebody is too soft or not the masculine leader that maybe should be the ideal leader, right? So I want to talk about, how do you address this misconception?
Yeah. So we touched on it a little bit earlier that empathy is not just being nice. You can be nice, but it doesn't mean you see my point of view, or you're curious mm-hmm. about my point of view, right? Exactly. It doesn't mean that I cave into any unreasonable demands. It just means I listen and I try to find a way forward. And if I need to make a tough decision, like a layoff, like a difficult performance review, can I do that with empathy? Can I do that with curiosity and with the goal of wanting to support the person to do their best work, or, you know, support the person in this really tough business decision? We're not going to change the layoffs. We're doing the layoffs. So how can I deliver that news? How can I understand what you might be feeling, what resources you might need? How can I best support you? How can I listen to you get upset about it and be okay with that?
While you were talking, I immediately was thinking about two examples. One is Stripe. During the layover of Stripe, during the lockdown, Stripe had to lay over a lot of people, and they shared a letter from their heart saying that, I'm sorry that we created this mess, and I'm sorry that we cannot continue further, but however, I do want to set you up for success. So in some countries, they made sure that people had like 4 months or 6 months to still get paid. Then on the other hand, they also set up people for success to connect with career coaches as well. And the other example that I wanted to share was during different occasions when there is a massive layoff, I see on LinkedIn oftentimes managers, you know, connecting the people that they had to fire, right? Or being mm-hmm. that advocate for that person that I have to mm-hmm. let you go. I'm sorry that I have to let you go. Mm-hmm. Instead of hiding behind a letter of a department.
Yeah.
4 letters. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to mention it. 4 letters. And then I think it was Valentine's Day. On Valentine's Day or the day after, sending an email saying to so many people, if you don't sign up now, if you don't reply to this email, you're fired, or we have to let you go. And mm-hmm. that's the opposite of what I see with empathy, right? So even though I know that as a manager, as a leader, you have to make hard decisions, and sometimes you're not in control when it comes to letting people go. Sometimes these numbers are given by HR or some other people, right? Mm-hmm. And they have to say, well, you have to let go of 5 people. Mm-hmm. And it may feel like Russian roulette, but still, how you treat them mm-hmm. along this journey will be forever memorable.
Well, and I included a story in my book about a C-suite leader who had to do some extensive layoffs. And he said the realization they had not only was just how well you treat these people, but the survivors will see how you're treating these people. And if you want those people that are left to keep performing, they're going to know. I mean, they're going to, you know, they're looking around at empty desks or empty, you know, empty slots of their friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at least I remember him saying, we wanted them to know that everyone was treated with respect. And with dignity, and that this wasn't an easy decision. But back to the misconceptions, that's the misconception is, oh, I'm not going to be able to make a difficult business decision if I'm empathetic. No, you can make a difficult business decision with empathy, right? Mm-hmm. The last one is that people think empathy means you have to agree, that you have to condone the viewpoint. It doesn't mean that. We can still walk away with our own viewpoints, but I can better understand why you have the view you have, why you think that strategic direction is better than the one I'm proposing.
And also being respectful about it, right? Because seeing things differently, it's not a bad thing, but too often people want to, you know, too often in this case, maybe I would want to force my opinion, my way of thinking towards you. And that's not the thing that we have. Even though we are both empathy advocates, we love empathy. We see empathy from different angles and touch upon it from different angles. And that's why I just had this great conversation with you a while ago. And I also immediately thought, like, I need to bring you on this conversation because it's a different way of tackling empathy from different insights. And when 100%. You approach things like that, you can reach so much more within your team as well.
Well, and that's why, you know, it's so great, Vivian, because I was so happy your episode will air soon in a few months on the Empathy Edge podcast. I hope folks will tune into that. But but also
I'll make sure of it. I'll make sure to share it.
Awesome. Awesome. But it's this idea, like I didn't start out, I came at it from, you know, I came at empathy from a marketing and branding point of view. Mm. I came at it as the ability to connect and engage with your audience. Yeah. The secret weapon of that, the secret sauce is empathy, right? Yeah. And then I dived into culture and leadership. And so that's why I, you know, our worlds have collided in the world of inclusion, because in order to create an inclusive environment, let's go back to the recipe metaphor.
Yeah.
You need empathy to fuel that understanding. Otherwise, you just have a bunch of really different people disagreeing with each other and they have no way to
connect. We all see that now. We all see that playing out now.
We all see that now, right? But I mean, empathy is the fuel that adds that, you know, but I didn't approach it from the diversity and equity and inclusion angle, but that's where my world has ended up. And so I'm learning from folks like you about different nuances to empathetic leadership. There are a lot of nuances. There's you know, psychological safety. There's diversity and equity. And there's a lot of both philosophical nuances as well as operational. Like, what does that look like in a company? What are the policies? What are the practices? What are the habits? What are the ways that we do things here and how people are rewarded and celebrated and acknowledged that bring empathy to the forefront, that bring inclusion to the forefront, as this is something we're really banking on to be successful.
Exactly. And I wanna bring in something else as well, because for me, my journey of empathy has been amplified. I broke my ankle almost two years ago. And ever since then, being able to understand what people with a disability, whether it's hidden or visible, what they are going through, right? Some new offices are designed with the amazing styles, but yet too often people forget that the doors are super heavy. Sometimes it feels like you need to do weightlifting to be open the door, literally. And not realizing how much power I have to take from my ankle to be opening that door.
Yeah.
And noticing that they are missing a button so that the door can easily open, because what happens with a person who is in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
You're excluding
or they're older and they don't have the strength. Exactly. Or they're a child and they can't. I deal with this with my kiddo all the time. Like, there's just doors he can't open. He's 11. Exactly. Like, you know, and I always notice it, Vivian, when I'm in the restroom, I notice where they put the hook on the door.
Sometimes you can exactly see when a woman is involved or somebody would think of women.
Because I think about, I have a relative who's in a wheelchair and I'm stretching to hang my purse up at the top.
Yeah.
So what is she going to do? Right. Yeah. So just all these little things that are not, they're not there to annoy us or make things harder for business owners. They're there to just have a little intention, have a little bit of thought. And this is why diversity is so important. It's like just this cycle. Definitely. If you don't have those voices represented at the table to even say, hey, maybe we should put that hook a little bit lower because I'm only 4'9" and I can't reach it. That's why diversity is important, is because there's things that you're not being a bad person because you can't see it, but you have to be open to hearing someone else show it to you.
Exactly.
You know, and that's where it's empathy. Like my empathy for people in different circumstances will enable me to listen to their ideas and then enhance the decision that I'm making for the business.
Exactly. I wanna go into a topic you brought up earlier, and that is Gen Z, but I wanna address it in a way that we are addressing all the different generations, right?
So yes.
What would you recommend leaders, how they can handle generational differences in a workplace to foster a more empathetic environment?
Okay, I love this question because, you know, we were talking about being exposed to different people coming at this from different angles.
Exactly.
I'm going to defer to an expert that is my go-to. And I just quoted her in an article that I wrote for Forbes about bosses don't have to be their employees' therapists. That's not what empathy means. It just published last week. And that woman's name is Anna Liotta, A-N-N-A-L-I-O-T-T-A. She wrote a book that was so impactful to me on this topic. It's called Unlocking Generational Codes. And she is a generational expert. You should have her on this. Yeah. She talks about the fact that each generation literally has an operating code based on events and things that have happened around the time they're 10 or 11. And it impacts the way they see many different things, right? So if we look at the workplace and we've got five generations working in the same workplace now. We look at generations, older generations who see, let's say, information. Let's look at how they view information. Boomers and older generations see information as power. For the most part, I don't want to stereotype everybody in a generation, but because of events that happened in that generation as they were growing up, they see information as power to be hoarded. Whoever has the most information wins, right? Younger generations see information as needing to be democratized. Because if everyone has access to the information, we can actually make better, more efficient decisions.
Exactly.
I'm not going to put a judgment on either of those things. Some viewers might.
Well, some in the middle. I see value in both.
But the point is to just understand that. So it's not... We're understanding people's intentions, right? Same thing with communication. What is professional communication to a boomer versus a young, you know, college graduate Gen Z? So there's all these different things that pop up in the workplace that are different simply because of our generational lens. And then add on the intersectionality of our ethnicity, our gender, our sexual orientation, right? It gets complicated. And so it's not so easy to just say, well, this is just the way we do things here and everyone just needs to get used to it.
Oh, that's a favorite line. And it's a worldwide line, right? that's being used everywhere. It's being misused and used everywhere. And the moment that you activate that line, that's when you amplify distrust. That's when you
completely, because you've closed off conversation. Yeah,
exactly.
And so I'm just going to close off this by saying the more that you can listen, the more that you can assume positive intent, and instead of making assumptions, have a conversation and do your best to learn about the other generations. And that includes Gen Z learning about the other generations too. It doesn't have to just flow downhill.
It goes both ways. It goes both different ways. Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
And that's really how we're going to get beyond generational conflict. There was some organizations, I remember a few years ago, hearing an interview about certain organizations that invest in intentional cross-generational mentoring within their organization. Yeah. So they pair
reverse mentoring, you mean?
Yeah, a senior VP with a brand new IC. Right, yeah. But it's not necessarily, it's supposed to be a mutual arrangement, right? Mm-hmm. So that the older person can learn about the younger generation and the younger generation can learn about the older. And if you'll just indulge me, I want to share a quick story on this.
Yeah.
Because... Mm-hmm. At my leadership trainings, at some of the longer ones, I do a role play. And the role play is different depending on the client, but a lot of clients tend to select the one on delivering a difficult performance review.
I can imagine that. Yeah.
Each person has their own backstory that I give them that they don't tell the other person. Mm-hmm. One person is a manager. The other person is the person receiving the performance review. And what happens sometimes is if I'm in a cross level training where I'm not just training C-suite leaders, for example, sometimes you'll get a duo of a very senior leader and like a 20 something individual contributor. Mm-hmm. And without them realizing, they swapped roles. Yeah. So it was the senior leader getting the negative performance review and it was the younger person delivering it. Yeah. And what happened is, I didn't realize this, and now I intentionally try to do it. But the first time it happened, the person said the senior executive said, "Wow, I didn't realize how hard it is to get negative feedback. I forgot what it's like to get negative feedback." The younger person said, wow, I didn't realize how hard it is to tell someone that they're not performing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how emotionally hard that is to tell someone that their performance is not good enough. And they came away with an understanding of each other that they wouldn't have had because of just their places in the organization and the generations True. They were in. So True. It can be really powerful, like you said, with using VR and helping people really see that perspective for themselves instead of being told what it is.
Yeah. And also it's about, I see it as about widening your lens. It's not erasing your lens or erasing your lived experience or everything that you have added. It's about widening your lens and seeing that somebody else, their truth is their truth, but creating that space to value that truth, to respect that truth. That's what I appreciate about empathy.
Yeah.
And so many questions that I want to ask, but I want to also ask this following question because it's very valuable. You said something about performance, right? And I want to connect it to feedback. So how can leaders use feedback effectively to enhance their self-awareness and their leadership skills?
Oh, what a good question. So, you know, as you know, you read the Empathy Dilemma and the five pillars. The first two are self-awareness and self-care.
Yeah.
And that's because you have to have your own house in order before you're able
exactly.
to be empathetic for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you are spinning in your own stuff, if you're insecure, if you're just blindly running, right? You miss that opportunity to connect. You miss that opportunity. And then because you're so much in self-preservation, you take every bit of feedback with defensiveness or fear. As a personal attack.
Yeah.
And so being able to take in feedback in a way that you understand that it will enhance what you do and be open to it, right? You don't have to listen to you don't have to change because of every negative thing you're hearing. But, you know, notice patterns and be receptive to the fact that if someone's taking the time to share something with you, there might be some validity in that. Now, I'm not talking about trolls online. I'm not talking about haters. Many times,
that's a whole nother level.
Another level, but I think sometimes we're starting to equate anyone who has negative feedback as a hater. It doesn't mean they're a hater. And one of the things I talked about in the Empathy Edge, that one of the traits of empathetic leaders, if you want to be a strong empathetic leader, is to learn how to take feedback as a gift and understand that it is free market research for you. Of someone sharing something about you. And if you're able to take that in with curiosity to say, I didn't realize I was coming across that way. Tell me more about that. Tell me more about how that made you feel. And what specifically did I do or say, or how did I respond? You can decide what to do with that information. But by ignoring it, you just ignore an opportunity for growth. And so one of the little tricks that one of the folks I interviewed for the first empathy book, The Empathy Edge, talked about hiring for empathy. One of the hacks they had in the interview was to give a little piece of negative feedback and see how the applicant responded. Mm-hmm. And if the applicant responded with curiosity and humility, they knew that they were emotionally regulated.
Yeah.
If the person reacted with anger and you know, stubbornness, they knew that that person really didn't have a handle on their emotional intelligence and their emotional regulation.
Or I'm going to bring in a different variety in it.
Yeah, because, please. I'm being very binary with that, by the way. Yeah.
While you were saying this, I was just like, I don't know how I would feel if I would get something like that, because it's also about the delivery. That's one thing.
Yes.
And it's also about the surprise element that I wonder, is it fair? Is it inclusive to add that in? Because if you're looking for empathy, there are so many other ways to activate that or to seek that. And maybe you're catching me on a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the interview went well, but just that particular part didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you writing me off just because of your perception of me maybe not being emotional intelligence?
It's just information. Tricky. It's just information, right? And so, again, to your point, it depends on how it's delivered. You know, you don't want to deliver it in a snarky way, right? Yeah. But if you say, I'm noticing, Vivian, that you're not asking a lot of questions about the culture here, or about the reporting structure, or about whatever, that's causing me a little bit of concern. Can you share more about that? Definitely. If you're able to respond, right, and say, oh, I didn't realize it was time to ask questions, or I didn't realize, you know, whatever it is, it's just one tool, right? We don't want to just say one tool is going to solve for everything. There's not just one way. But to the point about feedback, the way that we take in feedback, you hit the nail on the head when you said it. I could be having a bad day when I get that feedback, right? And so that's why the self-care is pillar number two.
Exactly.
Because if I am at my full capacity, I'm probably going to be in a better state to take that in, again, without defensiveness or fear or anger.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also, while you were saying this, because I only realized now that, and I want to add empathy in for the leaders as well, because we have been addressing a lot of things from the leadership perspective, right? What if we could also support leaders with adding an empathy ingredient in it as well? So the thing that I wanted to mention, that empathy is not it's a tango that you need to dance with the person that you're interacting with as well, or a different dance or a different recipe. Find what works well with you.
Yeah.
Find what works well with you, but also by you being a role model, who shows up as an empathetic leader, you are also role modeling for other people to activate their empathy muscle or skills or recipe as well. And if empathy is not yet there where it needs to be, why not provide training for the whole group so that they can understand, okay, how can they leverage empathy? How can we learn better to provide effective feedback? Because in some countries, in the Netherlands, we are known to give direct feedback, which is not always appreciated. And where maybe in Asia, there are some countries where they are very polite with accepting the feedback, but in the meantime, you don't know what's happening in the inside, but still they are very polite and you think, well, they took it well. You don't know what happens within their culture as well. So have a conversation about how you receive feedback, how do you want feedback, and how do you give feedback, how do you want feedback, to demystify how to approach this whole feedback dance, because we don't learn from university, from college, how we can give effective feedback.
Right.
I'm trying to teach that to my child. I'm trying to teach that at home.
Yeah.
I say it's a different way of gentle parenting and also gentle relationship, right? But if you don't know what you don't know, then it's easier to go into your whole bias trap of doing what your system is defaulting.
Yeah.
And I want us to do our best to apply our growth mindset and learn more about empathy and how we can apply it into, for example, feedback, providing feedback and also receiving feedback as well.
I love everything you're saying. And so can I just say, first of all, to your point, everything you want from your team needs to be modeled by you.
Exactly.
Whether it's empathy, whether it's work ethic, whether it's, you know, warmth, whether it's whatever
which
it is.
It's
not always easy, but the point is, you know, I think where we get into trouble is assume that because I'm a leader,
exactly,
I can't connect. I have to have this, I don't even know what
superhero mask.
Perfect. I have to like make no mistakes. I have to hold myself apart from people and not let them into my life.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage leaders when I do my leadership trainings and when I do my trainings, the cross level trainings, create a common language around all of this. Mm-hmm. And then you can be, hey, I'm going to go to my team today and say, I'm working on enhancing my leadership style. Yeah. I'm going to be doing some things that you might be surprised by. You might wonder what I'm doing, but I'm trying to build more connections. You can be vulnerable and tell your team that you're working on your leadership skills.
Another soft skill. Why are you mentioning another soft skill, which is very hard to do, but so valuable.
Right.
So
but also valuable. That's another one that's misunderstood. Vulnerability and doesn't mean crying on the floor and falling apart. Vulnerability just means being honest, right?
Yeah.
And so you can confidently be vulnerable. You can say, I know I'm not perfect and yeah. I'm working on becoming a better leader every day. And exactly. I want you to help me do that. I want you to give me feedback. I want you to give me ideas if you want. I want you to tell me what's working, what's not. And mm-hmm. I'm going to be asking you more questions about you, Vivian. I'm going to be, and it's not because I'm spying on you. I'm trying to get to know you. Yeah.
You're curious about me.
Exactly. But notice the tone I'm using. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, I'm trying to be an empathetic leader. Please love me. Like that's a different tone than to say with confidence, I never stop learning. I never stop growing, no matter how senior I get. And so I'm always open to your feedback about how I can improve and what will work best to help you do your best work in this team. Yeah. So I think it's the way we approach it and to understand that you don't have to build your leadership skills in secret. I would encourage you to share with your team that you're building your leadership skills to your point, because you're modeling a growth mindset. Exactly. You're modeling continuous improvement.
Yeah. And I recently learned that about the fixed mindset and growth mindset. The fixed mindset isn't bad because fixed mindset is often needed to learn from a situation, right? So seeing that as a lesson, but we need that balance between fixed mindset and a growth mindset, where growth mindset is where a lot of value lays when it comes to innovation, when it comes to performance, when it comes to so many things as well. So I appreciate you for sharing this as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I'm building a leadership mastermind, is because a lot of senior leaders don't invest in themselves. They invest in their people and then somehow magically think at some point in their career, they're done. Like this is the best version of themselves they're ever going to be. Right. and even the best leaders can find ways to improve. And those are the ones that we see. Those are the ones that are curious, the ones that keep growing, the ones that take feedback in, the ones that listen, those are the ones doing phenomenal work in the world. They're the ones building the teams that we go, how is that team meeting their objective every quarter? How is that team so close? Why does that guy's or that gal's team have the lowest churn rate of any department in our company? Like, why are people clamoring to work with that leader? We can all be that kind of leader if we intentionally build the skills.
And especially now, this will be my almost last question, especially now that everything is being measured or everything is being shared, right? You have Indeed, you have LinkedIn, you have Glassdoor, where people share their opinion about the manager, about the workplace, and about how you're treating them. And it's the same thing that the quote from Maya Angelou, people don't remember what you do. They remember how you made them feel, and you can give them the bonuses. You can give them a lot of things, and that's very valuable. So please don't stop that. But how you make them feel is the best thing that you want to leave behind, because you want them to be able to remember the amazing carrot cake that you cooked together, you ate together, also provided your people or your stakeholders with. So thank you. I see a comment. And I think it has to do with the comment that I made about the leadership the other way around. So thank you, Erica, for sharing.
Thanks, Erica.
I want to go to the final question, because we are almost halfway through 2025, and it's getting 2030. What is your wish when it comes to humanizing the workplace and promoting empathy at work?
Oh my goodness. What a question, Vivian. I think, when I started down this path, it was initially for my son, who was 2.5 at the time. And I think you've heard this story, that I was just, back in 2016, I was really frustrated with the examples of leadership that were in the world. And at the same time, I mean, you have kids. I was trying to teach him about empathy and collaboration and belonging and all of these things. And it made me sad. It just made me go, why am I bothering to do this if this is the examples he's going to see? Yeah. So that didn't sit right with me. And I said, you know, this is where I started my research on. There's got to be leaders and there's got to be brands out there who are winning with empathy. And we need to be shining a light on them. We need to normalize that and make the people who are unempathetic the outliers, right? That are not achieving high performance. And even if they are, at what cost, right? And so I said this when I wrote my first Empathy Edge book, and I say it again because I featured in the first empathy book at the end a story of a school, a K-8 school that is designed primarily from empathy. And that's how they build their curriculum. That's how they do their teaching. And their kids go on to outperform in high school and college, right? And what they're doing is they're working with that younger generation to really tap into the innate empathy we are all most of us are born with, to make it part of their identity. And I'm getting to my point here on this question, because when you do that, when you create, I remember speaking to the founder of this school and her saying, you know, I just want kids to not even have to think about whether they're going to be empathetic or not. They just are, right? And that's why in the end of my first book, and even with this book, I want there to come a day where we don't have to write books about empathy. We don't write books about breathing unless it's like a yoga book, right?
Well, we do.
We do. But I understand what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying. I want
it to just be part of who we are, that it would almost be laughable for someone who's like a young professional in 2030, 2040, 2050. Why do we even have to talk about empathy in the workplace? Isn't it just there? Like, and that's my long answer to your question, is I want this to be such a part of who we are.
I have a pop-up question.
Yeah.
Within 1 minute, three people who are globally known, who would you nominate as your top three people that are global known?
Barack Obama.
Okay. Yes.
Definitely up there. Jacinda Ardern, who was the former Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I would say, who else would I say? I'm sure there's a celebrity in there, but I'm thinking of a few. I'm thinking of Meryl Streep. I'm thinking of Jane Fonda. I'm thinking of people who speak out for others who are not like them. And do it in such a way that they're trying to promote compassion and they're trying to promote justice and being in a position of privilege and doing that is really empathetic to me. And I would say a business leader perspective, it would be folks like Richard Branson. It would be folks like Mark Cuban, who actually had an epiphany about leadership. He used to be a very non-empathetic leader.
Exactly. He's different. He's different.
And so he's proof you can make a decision to be a different kind of leader.
Yeah. I have a final comment popped up. Do you want me to include it?
Yeah.
So Erica is asking, where role does culture play in this?
Okay.
And what do you mean by this? If you could share it, that would be valuable. Or can you guess what this is, what she's referring to?
I think I can assume, but if Erica wants to elaborate, she can. I think she's trying to understand what role, because we're talking a lot about empathetic leadership. And I guess, Erica, you're trying to understand, so what's the role of culture to support empathetic leadership?
Yeah.
And if that is the question you're asking, feel free to correct me. But in the Empathy Edge, I wrote about the fact that empathy has to exist at three levels within an organization, or it's not authentic. But think of it like a concentric circle. Empathy is a human trait, a human emotion, a human perspective. So it has to start at the individual level, right? You can't just dictate empathy within an organization. It has to start with a group of individuals deciding they are going to lead in an empathetic way, and they're going to show up in an empathetic way. And then the next concentric circle, to Erica's point, is culture. Now, how do I create an environment where empathy can be rewarded and modeled and celebrated and is a catalyst for collaboration within that environment. So it's almost like culture's the soil, culture's the terroir, if you're a wine fan. You could hire the most empathetic individuals, but if you put them in a culture, in an environment that kind of beats it out of them.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
We look at certain healthcare organizations, even certain nonprofits, by the way, have very dysfunctional cultures because they're attracting empathetic people, but they're not enabling that empathy to be put to good use. They're not enabling people to bring their natural empathy to the work. Mm-hmm. And then the third concentric circle is brand. Now that you're internally, your leaders are empathetic, your culture is empathetic, now you can present an empathetic brand externally because it's believable and authentic. It's starting from the inside out. So I believe culture is an important part of the environment and also the operationalizing of empathy to what we were talking about earlier. So you can't just say empathy is our value. Here it is on our pretty poster. And you all should understand what we mean by being empathetic.
Exactly.
Carry on with your day, right? What is the organization doing? How are the policies set up? How are the practices set up? How are meetings run? How are rewards and bonuses given out? How are people evaluated? How are they hired? All of those things are operational decisions that you embed empathy into in order to truly live it out on a daily basis within your culture.
It's been a joy talking with you about this topic. I mean, I could talk for hours when it comes to empathy and also the different angles, but I wanted to say thank you so much for this conversation and also for the people who are watching this or listening to this. Connect with Maria Ross, listen to her books or read her books as well, connect with her. And there's so much to unpack when it comes to empathy, but thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. And can I just direct folks to theempathydilemma.com if they're interested? They can get a free chapter of the new book and check it out. Yeah. And also they can join my email list to find out about my new mastermind. And I'm doing a free event to get it kickstarted. So folks might be interested in attending that.
Exciting. Thank you so much, Maria. And for everybody, next week I will have a Dutch Let's Humanize the Workplace, but within 2 weeks I'll do an English version. So Erica's saying this has been wonderful. Looking forward to reading your book and sharing this knowledge. So thank you so much as well. And until next time, everybody. Bye.